Hello, this is Richard Wells in Quality Assurance at Ceratec. I just wanted to stop and take a moment to wish you all a very Merry Christmas, have an accessible new year, and may you find contentment in the days ahead.
Comments made on the Ceratec Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Ceratec Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Ceratec Podcast.
Welcome to the Ceratec Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.ceratec.com,
a production of Ceratec Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Ceratec Podcast 89 for December 19th, 2011. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Anger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Well, this week we start out with a story from AppleViz, and they are starting a new category on their site called the iOS App Hall of Fame. This is a pretty cool idea. Each month they're going to have listeners or users of the site nominate a couple of apps, and we'll actually nominate an app for the top spot. They're going to choose two each month to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
That's right. I love this idea.
Yeah, me too. And to actually kick this thing off, they're going to induct a total of 8 apps for the first month. And guess which app is among the nominees?
Our very own iBlink Radio. And
really?
Really? And we're in great company, actually. There are apps like Tweetlist and VizWiz and some of my other favorite apps aside from iBlink. So certainly head on over to appleviz.com and show us some love and nominate the other apps that you adore as well.
Absolutely. Get out there and vote, not just for us, because we do love for you to vote for us, but also to get out there and vote for apps that you really use and care about. And what a wonderful site and what a wonderful way to find out what's out there. I mean, self-discovery is one thing when looking for the path to enlightenment, but to find out about other apps that are just as accessible and fun to use, that's the way to go. And why not learn from your friends over at AppleViz?
Yeah, that's why I love this, because there are so many apps there, and I love that the resource is there, and you can search all day to your heart's content, but to actually see, you know, a manageable listing of what people truly do use and find accessible, that's just nice.
Agreed. Sometimes you may have a favorite app that you are using, and Apple will pull it from the App Store, and you know, there's no way to update it, obviously. And if for some reason you change devices or whatever, you may not be able to get it back. We have an article in our show notes about how to avoid that pitfall. And it just simply talks about backing up your apps. And it's one of those things that maybe with iOS devices and other devices similar, maybe we don't do as frequently as we should. But this is a really good article about how to actually avoid losing a favorite app.
It's funny you say that, because I was updating different apps for my family iPad. People steal my iPad and I have to go back and steal it from them. And Bejeweled was one of my mom's favorites. And they recently pulled Bejeweled 2 from the App Store. And in the description for the product on the new version of Bejeweled, they even say, look, we've retired the earlier version. This is the new version. If you still have the earlier version, you know, you can still have it, but you better back it up. And it's funny, I read this and saw that on the App Store at the same time. So sometimes app makers, not just Apple, but app makers say, you know what, this is kind of old, I'm going to retire it, and this is a new version. And for accessibility, you might like the other version.
Yeah, and this can happen quite a lot, where you update something on your phone and figure out that people have broken things horribly. But if you haven't updated the app on your computer yet, then you can still save the day. The article is good, talking about backing up the app file. And the article says that once you've done that, you should drag it onto iTunes so that it will reimport. For us, you wouldn't do that. You would use the add file to library command in iTunes and point it to the app that you want to import.
I was listening to Triple Click Home episode 2 the other night, and Alina Roberts, who is our new face and voice on the podcast, and welcome Alina. She did a great job along with the rest of the team. She was talking about how, you know, when you look at the App Store and you see 10 new items, it's really easy just to hit update all and just, you know, say, even if you read the little blurb about what has been fixed in the latest app, there's usually not much there. As she pointed out, it usually just says bugs fixed, and that's really not real helpful. So the tendency is just to go ahead and update everything. But that may not always be a good idea. I was checking email the other day and saw an email from AppleViz saying, whatever you do, do not update to the latest version of Skype on your iOS device, because apparently 3.6 has some serious accessibility regression.
Yeah, they don't have such a good record with this. Skype seems to continually break accessibility. Then a lot of people complain and they fix a lot of it, and then they turn around and break it again. And this has happened so often that you'd think that Skype would say, we should probably pay attention to this from the outset rather than having to appease all these customers when they complain about lack of accessibility and have to go back and do more work. But they've not learned their lesson yet. And unfortunately, neither has Netflix. The accessibility of Netflix on iDevices has never been stellar, but it has at least been usable, at least until the very latest Netflix update. I have not updated. Yay, I heard from someone that I should not do so.
Don't.
And so I'm going to keep my current version. Joe, what's going on with the Netflix update?
GRRR. The current version of Netflix is very depressing. It took a lot of the text elements away and replaced them with visual box art. So it's like the front cover of your DVD cases, and which is just lovely, because even from a low vision standpoint, if somebody wrote in some weird font or if you didn't recognize the actors in the movie, you're not exactly sure what the movie is, and placing your finger on the screen with voiceover just gives you that lovely ding, 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 ding noise. And that's very unhelpful, because right now you can see what you previously viewed, which is nice, but you can't see your instant queue, nor can you really browse on your iDevice. So here's the workaround if you accidentally have done this. Run to the website, go to Netflix.com, log in, find a movie that you want to watch, go over, watch a few seconds of it, hit stop, then go back to your iDevice and go to previously viewed. You'll be able to find out that you started listening to that movie, but you're not going to be able to browse or go anywhere else or rate it or do it, most of the stuff that you want to do with the app. Also, swiping is a little weird. You have to do the double tap and hold and then drag your finger across. And there is a menu that comes up if you do manage to accidentally hit a movie. There's a what looks like a pop-up menu, but is a menu that pops up and tells you the year and the actors, but does not tell you the title of the film. So you have to know your film pretty well that you, because you're like, huh, 1999.
Random movie from 2009.
It has, oh, it has Tommy movie. Lee Jones. Okay, I'm good. Let me listen to the first 15 minutes of this. Oh, now
you
I know.
You can just turn this into a trivia game.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, the website isn't always your bestest friend either, because the website changes on accessibility as well, where they're using this box art title thing. And we saw this in the previous version of Netflix. If you put your finger on an icon, it would say 1999. Well, that was actually the cover of the movie. And then the text was out to the right. Well, now we don't even have that. And it also changed on the Xbox 360, on Netflix. So this was a title update for all platforms. And unfortunately, only in a few situations, like the Xbox one is a lot easier to read now. The PS3 one is a little better, and I'm not sure about the Wii. So Netflix did it all the way across on many, many applications.
For your reference, the Twitter account for Netflix is Netflix Help. And so if you would like to make your voice heard and let Netflix know how unhappy you are, that would be much appreciated because they're not going to change anything unless they realize that a lot of people need it to be changed.
It's really, really sad. It's one of my favorite apps on iDevices, and it's my portable television, and I just am flummoxed by the way this is. And even on apps that are fairly good at accessibility, behaviors can change. This week, we had a change to the solitaire game King's Corner, and in which they changed that program to go from saying on playing cards, Jack of Clubs, to Blackjack, or a Jack of Hearts would now be Red Jack. And, you know, even making something like that, which I guess is helpful to some who might not be familiar that each suit of cards has a distinguishing color, it changes the behavior of how I've been using this app for almost a year now. And that threw me too, because I'm used to playing that game a certain way, and now I have to stop and re-listen and, wait a minute, what did that say? Black 8? Black Ace? Where I heard Ace of Clubs. Well, VoiceOver actually pronounces that a little different in the phrasing. So Ace of Clubs sounds a lot easier for me to pick up, especially if I use the compact voice, than Black Ace or Red Ace, because it doesn't pronounce ace. It doesn't sibilate as well. So you lose it, especially in the compact voice, if you're using that. And, you know, that too, where somebody is doing something helpful, changes the way that the behavior is. So it's not just accessibility in this case, it's usability. And that can come in an update as well.
So the bottom line then is that the honeymoon is over. And Joe, you called this one a long time ago, I think, when iOS accessibility first started happening and the groundswell started moving that direction. And I think people were thinking of it as a magic bullet or a silver bullet, whatever term you want to use there.
Right. And on TripleClick, they called it accessibility by accident. Buddy mentioned that. And I think that's really, really a good term because there were some things that just worked out of the box. And then over time, things have gotten a little different. And I'm afraid that's going to continue. It's interesting that you bring that up, Jamie. This is a good discussion point. When we saw the early days of DOS, everything was text. So everything was fairly easy and great. And we could get to things and we could have things explained. As Apple continues to add more power to these chips, as they do in the iPad 2 and what they're planning to do rumored in the next version of the iDevices, and as games become the number one apps on the iStore, as is the case with Angry Birds, by far and away, that is the number one app on iTunes, you're going to have game makers then drive the hardware to do more graphically, and that's going to be a bell curve of everybody trying to do the exact same thing. And how can I make mine even prettier? Or, ooh, I've got more hardware now. I don't have to do text. Now I can do dancing letters. Now I can do, you know, sparkly text. I can do all this other stuff. And we saw this before. We've seen this in the PC. We see it in Android. This is just the nature of things. So it's going to be very incumbent upon us as users to demand accessibility of app makers who decide, okay, I'm tired of seeing that same old, plain old text. I got to put box art there. Now it's just going to be pictures of movies rather than text that accompanies that. And it's not just for us. It's also for other individuals as well, people with low vision, people with issues of cognizance, where a cognitive disorder keeps them from understanding certain parts about the UI. So it's becoming a visual medium, and that's something that is okay as long as there's accessibility for the rest of us.
So good developers are really having to be a lot smarter than they've ever been about their user base then, if they're really going to do a good job, because not only are they developing and designing with blind people in mind, but as you just said, with other disabilities. You know, good advocating, polite, professional, concise, informative is more and more important all the time.
Yeah, and it's easy to get discouraged in thinking, yeah, I'm always fighting this battle. I'm always having to say something to this developer or that developer or whatever. And if you look at it from that standpoint, it can become discouraging. But at the same time, I've seen enough successes to understand that that advocacy is worthwhile. And while occasionally you may want to curse the fact that you have to do it, it's still a necessary thing. And I like to think that there is a future where we aren't constantly fighting for that, because eventually we can educate people well enough to make this something that happens naturally.
Well, and some companies can use it as a marketing point. Downcast, getting back to Applebee's Hall of Fame, Downcast was using it as a badge of honor that they were, in, you know, being considered for the Hall of Fame. That's great that a company is going to go out there and champion accessibility, which is, you know, fantastic. That's great that people want to do that, and that should be a feature just as much as we look all the time for iOS and Mac updates to have that accessibility in the update, you know, because everybody goes online and goes, okay, what's the new accessibility updates? What's the new accessibility updates? Mm-hmm. That's great. Apple occasionally does that. They've gotten a lot better at putting that out there because they're recognizing that we're a market. Well, now as a market, we have to flex our muscles and our power. We have an article here from CNET that says that more people are actually spending time with their tablets and other devices than anything else. And it's a part of who we are in culture, not just it's a matter that this is, you know, my iPhone is my MP3 player, blah, 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 blah. No, it's becoming a life skill. And for that, we really have to stay on top of things and not expect accessibility to be there because Apple says it should be. No, it's not. And apps don't necessarily fall under a medium of must-have accessibility.
You know, when I saw that article and as I was reading it, I kind of flashed back to a vacation my wife and I took this past summer with some friends of ours. And while my wife and her friend were in a store shopping, my buddy and I were sitting on a bench and he was reading the news headlines on his phone. And it occurred to me as we were sitting there just kind of shooting the breeze and he was reading me some headlines, that he was doing something that guys have done for centuries, or for a couple hundred years anyway, which is to read the newspaper. I mean, that's basically what we were doing. We were sitting on the street corner reading the newspaper. It just happened to be in electronic form. And that just really goes to point out just how revolutionary this whole thing has been.
It truly has been. And it's something that we couldn't have necessarily done before. You may have had instances where some member of your family read the news to you or with you, but it wasn't necessarily something that you could do on your own. You'd have to wait for a while for the Braille version of this newspaper or magazine to come out. And now, so many of these newspapers and magazines, yes, there is newsstand where some of these things aren't accessible yet, and we should advocate for that. But in just as many cases, the organization will have all of this stuff online that you can just read in a web browser. So you can be kicking back reading the paper just like everybody else.
And you might be flying the friendly skies and not even be aware that an iPad is in the cockpit. Whenever I retweeted this article on Twitter the other day, there was some feedback from our followers that maybe this wasn't a good thing. But as you read the article and think about it, the use of an iPad in the cockpit for charts and manuals is going to replace...
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Let's hope the pilot is not playing Angry Birds. But it does make sense, like you said, Jamie, to have the manuals and the various other things that used to be in bulky paper and you'd have to flip through pages and all that to find what you're looking for. American Airlines is the first airline to get this approved to be used in the cockpit from takeoff to landing. And again, I think it makes a lot of sense as long as the pilot doesn't get distracted playing some game when they should be flying.
My only concern, and I'm sure they will, I mean, that they would have a backup iPad handy, because, I mean, things do crash, you know, so you're getting ready to land in this busy airport and you're coming in and all of a sudden your iPad crashes and, you know, what do you do at that point? Of course, I realize they do have navigational instruments, that they are viewing, so it's not exactly like that, I don't suppose. But technology definitely will fail you once in a while. So have an extra iPad handy, guys, please. They don't take up that much room. It's amazing how much money they're going to save in fuel, though. That was astounding to me.
Yeah, it was.
I don't have the number right in front of me, but it's like a million plus or whatever a year in fuel from just taking that extra paper off the plane. Speaking of updates that are a good thing, I suppose, or apps that are a good thing, Read2Go from Bookshare.org is available in the Apple App Store, and I've heard some good things about that. A lot of people are making good use of that app.
I use it quite frequently. The thing that I love most about it is that you can use the a cappella Heather voice to read, so you're not necessarily stuck with Samantha as you would be with iBooks. So this is quite a nice app. Go and grab it if you haven't already.
Microsoft is also releasing OneNote as its very first ever Office app for the iPad. Accessibility, anyone? Do we know?
We don't know, and I've never used this app on the PC either, although I do like the concept of it. It's sort of meant as, you know, everybody needs a notepad-type application, but this dresses that up quite a lot so that you can add charts and graphs and things that you might normally use Excel for to this OneNote document. And you can do bullet points and outlines like you would use Microsoft Word for. So it's a nifty little app that doesn't get a lot of attention either on the PC or on portable devices, but it is out. If anybody's tried it, let us know about the accessibility of the app.
I had the beta, and I just turned it on a second ago, and it just told me that there's now an iPad version. So I was going to be able to talk about it in a second, but I'm going to have to go to the App Store and update it. I've played around a little bit in it, but I, too, am one of those that are, OneNote, what's that? So yeah. It's something we may have to do a discussion as a follow-up, but wow, I didn't know. This is one of those apps that has iPhone and iPad versions, and my iPad just told me there is one, so we'll have to go check that out.
Coming up after the break, Carrier IQ gets transparent, and questions about Facebook and privacy? Say it isn't so. Right here on the Serotalk Podcast.
Hey parents, it's hard to pick up your kids nowadays without embarrassing them.
Hi, honey.
Not in front of my friends.
Well, kiss the embarrassment goodbye with OMGPS. OMGPS is a state-of-the-art navigation system that tells you exactly how far away you need to park when you pick up your kids.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
But she's not at the food court. She's at the movie theater.
Exactly. OMGPS comes with patented preteen reasoning technology to pinpoint precise pickup locations and minimize embarrassment.
In 100 yards, turn off the oldies music.
Thanks, OMGPS!
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Buddy Brandon from Serotech Technical Support. From my family to yours, here's wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday Season.
Happy Christmas!
Well, this week, Carrier IQ really came clean. They actually talked a lot. This is an article with an interview with the CEO, Larry Linhart, and the Vice President of Marketing, Andrew Coward. And this analytics company that, according to them, was just trying to provide information to phone makers and carriers to help with performance issues, just found themselves in the center of this huge controversy and still are, especially because of the video by Trevor Eckhart that apparently had some false information in it as well, or at least inaccurate information. Maybe I should state it that way.
Yeah.
This little short interview that we saw in the article is, I thought, quite convincing for me at least. Maybe I'm a little too easily sucked in, but they talked about the fact that one of the things on the video was an Android log file that shouldn't have been there, but the video doesn't really show what, if anything, Carrier IQ does with that information. There was some information there that shouldn't have been, but they didn't really exploit that in any way.
Yeah, for the Android log file, they said that some of the information in that log file didn't even come from Carrier IQ, and so the Trevor Eckhart video implied that all of the information you see here comes from Carrier IQ, and that wasn't necessarily true. they did come clean about a bug they discovered where they were not intentionally tracking SMS messages, but that data could come across in some cases. For example, if you got an SMS while you were on the phone, that data was captured, and they were sort of like, we were as surprised as anybody. This stuff is sitting on a server encrypted somewhere, but given that we didn't even know it was there, we haven't done anything with it, and we don't intend to.
The last line of the article kind of struck me. The CEO said, our world has been turned upside down. And you have to wonder if that is perhaps absolutely true. If they are as innocent as, you know, they say they are, they really aren't doing anything nefarious and really had no intentions of it. If they were just providing a service that has all of a sudden catapulted them to the top of the news in a very bad way, you have to think maybe that that really is true for them.
Yeah, I would say there's at least some truth to it. Now, they may not be entirely honest, but I do firmly believe that the carriers have a lot of responsibility in this respect. And I think the fingers got pointed at these guys where the carriers actually should have been much more targeted than they were.
Well, apparently the FBI is finding some uses for carrier IQ for law enforcement purposes. A Freedom of Information Act request has been put forth and has been refused by the FBI. They say this is a law enforcement matter and they don't need to turn over the records. We really don't know if they are investigating carrier IQ or if they are using it as part of another investigation. So to me, that's just kind of one of those, I don't know, you know, I don't feel like I have to know everything that the FBI is up to all the time.
Well, the previous article about carrier IQ, they firmly state that we would not turn over any of this information to law enforcement. We feel like we have to draw a line with that. And they state that they've never been asked. And so I found this particular article about the FBI using it to be interesting. But with that said, the article does state that this information may not have come directly from carrier IQ, that it could have been from just the carriers themselves.
Well, another company that does definitely have a track record of privacy concerns is Facebook. And
yeah,
Richard Stallman, creator of the Free Software Foundation, has stated that Facebook does massive surveillance with tracking cookies. As I think about this whole Facebook issue, the question that comes to my mind is how much more of this is going to come out before people really get tired of it, and what is going to replace Facebook? Because something will one of these days. So the question is, who will that be and what will that site look like?
I think there's always going to be this same privacy concern to greater and lesser degrees. And Richard Stallman does actually talk about Google+ as well. He just states that Facebook is much worse about this with their users than is Google+. And we've talked about this any number of times, like Facebook continues to track you even after you've logged out. And pretty much every podcast we have a story about Facebook and privacy. What I found kind of ironic was that I was reading this article about Facebook and privacy and what it tracks and what it doesn't and so on. And then the very next article I read, I saw the name of one of my Facebook friends in one of these. This friend and 6 million other people liked the article that you're just reading. So it was clear to me, all right, Facebook knows who I am on this page that is way outside of Facebook, and it's telling me, you know, which of my friends liked this thing that I'm reading.
Yikes. But we've said it several times, numbers of times. The internet is not private, and there's no reason to think it is. So, you know, that's just one of those things that we need to come to grips with, I think. And ironically, Facebook tops Google's own offerings to become the most popular Android app.
Too bad it's not highly accessible.
Yeah.
A lot of unlabeled buttons. They're getting a little better, but I still find myself using other apps to access Facebook. We actually talk a little bit about this on the upcoming episode of That Android Show. And you know, it's really funny because I sometimes use my iPad tethered to my Google Android phone, so I have the best of both worlds. And in certain apps, there are better experiences, like I'm thinking the TED Talks app and some media apps like Conan O'Brien's app and stuff are better on Android than they are on iOS. But it's kind of funny when this is the number one app and it's not necessarily extremely accessible. Do you guys use the Facebook app on iOS?
I occasionally do. There are three Facebook apps that I have. I have Focus for Facebook. I have one called Facely. And then I have the official Facebook app. Right now, I definitely like Focus for Facebook the most. Each of these kind of goes through periods where it updates things and then I don't like it and then it updates things again and I like it again. But what was interesting to me is that the Facebook app on Android is even more popular than Google search and is more popular than Angry Birds even.
And it makes you wonder why they're coming out with a Facebook phone in 2012, you know, with a Facebook button on it. You know, it's a pretty popular service. Just wish we could use it a little better. Wish they wouldn't change it so much. You know, but I also wish maybe for a Siri-like object on my Google phone. And we have here an article that says that Google could have a Siri competitor before the end of the year. Now, let me state before we go into this that Google had voice recognition on their phones before Siri. Of course, there was the Dragon Dictate app too. So Siri branded as a personal assistant. There's also things like Iris. And JJ demonstrated Genie on the last episode of that Android show. Well, that means that Google already has something in this area, but now Google wants to do something themselves and could have this out before the end of the year. And its code name is Majel. Well, that name has some significance, doesn't it, Ricky?
Yeah, perhaps just a little bit. For those of you who, for whatever reason, don't know, Majel Barrett voiced the computer in the Star Trek series. And I think that kind of spells out how Android intends this service to be. Whereas Siri has something of a personality, I think Android is intending their offering to not be so much about having some edgy personality and people ask it to marry them and so on. It's just like talking to computer on Star Trek. Now, what I would love is if they actually had a synth that was modeled on Majel Barrett's voice. That would be quite cool.
Yeah, and you want to tell your phone, tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a module for those phones to make tea yet. Maybe that'll be coming in Ice Cream Sandwich or whatever comes after that.
Well, if there's that Apple iOS coffee brewing thing that's going around the web, then you know, maybe it's possible. Maybe there'll be a Starbucks plug-in.
Nice.
Sounds good to me. While we're shopping for things, PC makers are kind of moving away from tablets a little bit and putting their hopes more on Ultrabooks. This is another one of those things we've talked about on several podcasts on ours and over on TripleClick as well, and I'm sure on that Android show. You know, the fact that a tablet is not a PC and not intended to be. And so I think people are beginning to find the limitations of the less expensive tablets and are perhaps moving toward the higher end products such as the MacBook Air.
There are several PC manufacturers that are just getting out of the whole tablet game. Dell had the Streak tablets, and those for some reason are going away. And there are a couple of other PC manufacturers that are saying, ah, forget it as well. And they're hoping that to make a device that is MacBook Air-like, so we're no longer talking about the low-end netbooks that were all the rage back in 2008 or so. Now people are looking to make very powerful PCs that are also as thin and light as they can possibly be.
While you're continuing the shopping, which, by the way, you probably might want to think about wrapping that up. It's getting pretty close to the end of the season. But AFB's Senior Holiday Guide is out for family members of people with vision loss. And there are several good tips in there. They certainly have some tips for low vision users, talking about contrast and that sort of thing. I'm sure Joe can have a lot more to say about that.
How do you feel, Joe, about the article? Not so much about the products that they list in the article. They've got several good things and they break it down by for the handyman in your life, for the cook, you know, so on and so forth. But they also have another section which is talking about decorating your home with your low vision loved one in mind. And do people do this for you? Is this a common thing to think about?
Yes.
Yes.
In my family, no glassware. Let's see. Nothing that is more than $20 that I can't replace at Hallmark. No. Bull in a china shop. That's me. There
sippy
are some
cups for your loved ones because they might spill things on themselves.
This is possible. This is absolutely possible. No, all kidding aside, some people have glare issues and some people have color issues. And so the simple act of turning lights off and having a Christmas tree with varying lights can change the way that you enter a room because, you know, what happens is, I think the tree belongs over here.
No, let's put it over here.
You know, and then the whole room is rearranged and you're kind of having to relearn things. You can have lots of little knickknacks all over the place that you didn't realize that your loved one has put out there. So your Coca-Cola polar bear collection, you know, that's been handed down generation after generation could be squished because you didn't realize that that's now on the coffee table. There's certain things that carry over. And a lot of these things are usually pictures or like I said, glassware that have reflections. So you don't think about it at the time of day, but I'm going to set this right here on the piano. And then you walk in and you get this huge glare because the sun came in at just the right angle and bounced right into your face and, glare. Those things do happen. And so it sounds kind of funny, but yeah, there are some things as a low vision user that my wife has learned not necessarily super fun for me, or she has to kind of give me the realm of, this looks really pretty, so this half of the house you're blocked off from. You know? And I'm like, you know, it's like a bad 70s sitcom where they draw a line down the middle of the room. This is your side. This is my side. But yeah, these things do happen. And there's some blindness issues related here too, because you do have some of that. Some people don't like smells. You know, some people are, you know, oh, I put out the potpourri. Oh, there's another month, you know. And so there's some other issues here too when you decorate that you might not realize off the top of your head might affect others.
I guess that's true, but at the same time, you're mentioning smells made me think of this. This doesn't really happen with people that actually know me well, but there's a certain thing where you're thinking about what to get the blind person for Christmas. And so there is this attitude of all of their other senses are heightened, so I should get them chocolate because they probably taste things more strongly than I do, or I should get them a candle because they must enjoy smelling things being a blind person and all. So I guess I still have a bit of a problem when someone tries to think about what gifts to get a blind person. You know, how about you just get to know the person themselves and not think about, you know, what blindness oriented thing should they have. But with all that said, this particular article does have a nice list of things that that would be good for anybody to have.
Well, and something else to think about there is that this article might be good for people who had sight and then are beginning to lose it. I don't know if the article stated it or if I just made this kind of leap in my own mind, but I pictured the senior adult who, you know, is gradually or maybe not so gradually losing their vision, and so they are actually transitioning into this visual impairment situation. That might be a good reason for someone to take a look at this article as well.
Especially if it's their first Christmas losing their vision, and that's so tied to pictures and family and all this other stuff. You know, there are other things that, you know, you can do to, you know, make that not as crazy for that individual who is adjusting. And that is a very, very valid point. I'm glad you brought that up, Jamie.
Well, this next article should be right down Mike Calvo's aisle. I mean, it made me think of him as I read it. Five geek gifts I would like to find under the tree this year.
Transformer... I thought of him too.
Yeah, it's like you just kind of go back and listen to previous Serotalk reviews that Mike has done. Transformer Prime tablet with a laptop dock. Well, certainly the MacBook Air, including the leather sleeve that this author wanted to go with it because it was a nice, lush, you know, covering for the iPad.
Yep, the Mophie Juice Pack Air also makes it onto this list, and I highly recommend this one myself. I don't like things that really bulk up the phone. At the same time, I think the Juice Pack, which sort of serves as a protective case, I mean, it doesn't protect the screen, but it does enclose the rest of the phone, serves as a battery charger, and it doesn't make the phone so thick and unwieldy, so that's a good thing. And the last item on this list is a backpack, and it's called the Book, B-O-O-Q, Mamba Shift Backpack. And this is a bag that you can throw lots of your gadgets in.
Sounds like we need some Mamba Shift music. I'm not sure what that would sound like, but I think it would be appropriate right here. We have a voicemail from David Doppler, and he talks about our guide dog story. That just will not go away. But you know what? That is just fine. That's what our listeners enjoy. We want to know what you enjoy. So let's hear this voicemail from David.
Hello, this is David Doppler. I just wanted to wish you all a Merry Christmas. And also, I wanted to make a comment about the guide dog song. I thought it was pretty cool. It's done really well, and I appreciated the extra info about how it was done. And it was just really, really done well. It was very clever, and I liked it. It was just something really different, and it was kind of uplifting and happy. And thank you so much for all you guys do. You're very, very much appreciated by me. You have definitely changed my life greatly by the accessibility information that you've had on your sites from different times to times, especially one of the things with David Whitbridge was a big help to me with VoiceOver. On the MacBook Pro. So I just want you to know how much you're appreciated, and I support you guys and wish I could do more for you. I just really appreciate you very, very much. You've been a real blessing to me in my life. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much, David, for your kind words. We appreciate you and all of our listeners quite a lot as well.
And if you haven't heard the Robot Guide Dogs with Mr. Matthew Campbell as the conductor of the Robotic Guide Dog Orchestra, here it is again so you don't have to go looking for it on the internet. Enjoy.
Ladies, gentlemen, and those like myself who can sound as if they were either persuasion.
And yeah, that hurts to think about.
Anyways, welcome one and all to what should be an amazing performance of an upgraded Christmas carol, specifically, the 12 Accessible Days of Christmas, performed by Serotek's own, Matt Campbell, with the Robotic Guide Dog Orchestra. To start us off, and no, you don't have to press a key to continue or anything like that. You just gotta show our cute and clunky robotic puppies some love as they make it out on stage.
Accessibility. On the second day of Christmas, a vision came to me. Two iBlink apps and the gift of accessibility.
On the third day of Christmas, a vision came to me. Three iPhone.
Two iBlink apps and the gift of accessibility. On the fourth day of Christmas, a vision came to me. Four webinars.
Three iPhone.
Two iBlink apps and the gift of accessibility. On the fifth day of Christmas, a vision came to me. Five podcast feeds, four webinars. webinars,
3 iPhones,
2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility. On the 6th day of Christmas, a vision came to me. 6 scanners scanning, 5 podcast feeds, 4 webinars, 3 iPhones, 2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility.
On the 7th day of Christmas, a vision came to me. 7 droids of talking,
6 scanners scanning, 5 podcast feeds, 4 webinars, 3 iPhones, 2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility. On the 8th day of Christmas, a vision came to me. 8 techies fixing, 7 droids of talking, 6 scanners scanning, 5 podcast feeds, 4 webinars, 3 iPhones, 2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility. On the 9th day of Christmas, a vision came to me. 9 trainers training, 8 techies fixing, 7 droids of talking, 6 scanners scanning, 5 podcast feeds, 4 webinars, 3 iPhones, 2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility. On the 10th day of Christmas, a vision came to me. 10 gamers gaming, 9 trainers training, 8 techies fixing, 7 droids of talking, 6 scanners scanning, 5 podcast feeds, 4 webinars,
3 iPhones,
2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility. On the 11th day of Christmas, a vision came to me. 11 music choices, 10 gamers gaming, 9 trainers training, 8 techies fixing,
7 droids of talking,
6 scanners scanning, 5 podcast feeds, 4 webinars,
3 iPhones,
2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility. On the 12th day of Christmas, a vision came to me. 12 real speak voices, 11 music choices, 10 gamers gaming, 9 trainers training, 8 techies fixing, 7 droids of talking, 6 scanners scanning, 5 podcast feeds, 4 webinars, 3 iPhones, 2 iLink apps, and the gift of accessibility.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Patrick Perdue from the SPN production team.
And so are we, as are us 32 instances of Derek Lane.
And I would just like to say... We would just like to say...
Happy holidays from 32 of me. And 32 of me.
To all of you.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And all that stuff from Saratov.
That was really bad. That was terrible. Yeah, no.
Actually, that sucks.
Well, let's open the mailbag again this week. Beth sends us a couple emails. The first one, she asks about talking TV remotes. And Joe, I know that you responded to her, but why don't you go ahead and briefly summarize that if you would, please.
Yeah, there are lots of apps that are out there, and there are lots of remotes that claim to be talking, but in a lot of situations, they don't necessarily connect to your proprietary cable box, and that is Comcast or Time Warner or Cox or anything like that, because a lot of the times those have internal firmwares that are changed or are so unique to that cable provider, even though it might be the exact same box from Scientific Atlanta, the codes might not be the same. It might not necessarily connect to whatever DVR software they're using. It might not necessarily connect to their on-demand software that they're using in order to push content from HBO or things like that. And so a lot of these universal remotes usually work with just the television. They'll allow you to change the channel. They'll allow you to raise or lower the volume and things like that. But the GUI menus, which would be the big menus of information, are hard to interact with. And there's no preset defined way of having that come across and having it talk. Now, there are geeky ways of doing this, way too crazy to get into here. But you could do it with Windows Media Center. You could do this through some remotes, like those remote apps that you might find that can use Bluetooth with your phone. You can do it through home automation. But generally, there's usually not a lot you can do in order to get to something that's behind their wall of you know, specifics, like with the Comcast.
Beth also mentions the Steve Jobs biography on Bard. And Mike Calvo actually mentioned this on our This Month in AT Serospective for November. And Mike pointed out that Bard actually had the book narrated, even though it's on Audible by a different narrator. And he was kind of puzzled as to why they would do that. And that actually was something I hadn't thought of. That's a good question. It would be interesting to know when and why they choose to record books themselves and when they use Audible content.
That is a good question, because they do tend to use a lot of Audible content. I see more and more of it. It, I think, in every case has come from Brilliance Audio Incorporated, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe there are certain divisions that are licensing this content to NLS, but that's just speculation.
Well, Tony Schwartz writes to us, and he found the accessible Google search page, and he says it's a pretty long URL, but he suggested that we link to it in the show notes, and we can certainly do that, and we'll do that, Tony. Thank you very much. We also got an email from Mary Sage. I hope I pronounced that last name correctly. She wants to know what ice cream sandwich is. We talk about it all the time, and what is that? And you know, that is a great point, because it actually occurred to me a couple of podcasts ago that sometimes we use terminology that we don't always explain. And I realize we can't always stop every time and go clear back to the basics of things. But I think sometimes it is a good idea to just cover the bases. An ice cream sandwich is a code name for a version of the Android operating system. Just like in Apple land, you have Lion and Leopard and Tiger. With Android, they have chosen to go with food references. So
delicious
ice cream
food.
Sandwich. Yes.
When you hear about gingerbread and honeycomb and all this stuff that makes
donut,
you really hungry.
Donut, froyo, E.
What was E? Was it eclair? If it
no.
wasn't, it should have been. I'll just
no,
say that.
No, I don't remember. I'd actually have to look it up. There actually is a Wikipedia article for all the different Android code names. And it, I think the new one that everybody's joking about is J Jelly Bean.
Right.
So the Android 4.0 doesn't sound as fun or as memorable or as sticky as ice cream sandwich. And that just tends to stick in people's heads. And it, like Jamie said, it's just like the code names that we were talking about in the last podcast, Chicago, Vienna, you know, the Vista was Vienna. And there's you just don't want to say,
did you get build 3652 last week?
Yeah, I did. It's awesome.
You know, it just doesn't sound as good as ice cream sandwich.
Right. Exactly. And I just noticed that all of these are sweet. Why don't they have a spicy Android release? I'd like to see Android Jambalaya.
Ooh, that would be good.
Yeah.
Salsa. Well, there was a salsa, actually, years ago. There was Sal, and then there was salsa. Salsa was the programming language for Sal.
Ah.
Mmm, salsa.
So see how much discussion a simple email can bring out of us. Continue to send those emails, resources@serotalk.com. Feel free to send those iReports to us via iBlink Radio on iOS or Android. Or you can just pick up the phone and call 866-997-2522. That is Blab, by the way, if you're interested. The Blab line is always open. We'd love to hear from you. You can certainly follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Serotalk. All good ways to get in touch with us. Well, that's going to wrap up the news for this week. Next week's podcast has a little bit of different content. We're going to have some interviews. We're going to have an interview with a college student, with a food critic, a gentleman who helped get an iOS app developed, and Lisa Salinger, our Serospectives host, is going to do a demonstration of Microsoft Security Essentials on system access. So you do not want to miss podcast 90. You're going to be full from all the food over Christmas, as will we. So we're just going to play those interviews and let you enjoy them. Trust that you will all have a wonderful holiday season, that you'll stay safe, and that you'll spend time with friends and family and all of the loved ones that surround you. And you know that we here at Serotech are your family, and if for some reason you're alone, we're thinking of you. So until next time, have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening, and have a safe and happy holiday.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.